Welcome back to the Hustle Podcast. Today I'm here with my friend Eric Bowman. Eric is a product designer at Facebook. He works on the groups team and previously founded and ran a startup for quite some time in the Bay Area. He's been in the industry for a very long time. In fact, he and I went to college together in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And today we're lucky to have him in the studio. He's in town on business and we figured, hey, let's get him in the studio and record a podcast. So here we are. Thanks for coming out to the East Side.
Dude, thanks for inviting me.
It's always good to see you. I think we talked more in the last couple of years than we ever did in school.
I think you're right. Yeah, totally.
It's awesome, though. There's been a lot of people from the Art Institute that have done really great things, I think.
Yeah, no, I certainly think there's a whole crew of us that they're doing great stuff.
Yeah, there's been maybe five or six people from Art Institute that have worked here. So, yeah, shout out to the Art Institute. Okay, so Eric.
Yeah.
Tell us a little about who you are and what you are doing.
Sure. Let's see. So I've been doing product design for, I don't know, we've been doing it probably the same length of time, maybe 18 years, maybe a little over that time. I started off doing photography. I learned a lot about visual design through photography and then gravitated towards learning more about, at the time it was called multimedia, and just sort of studying that at the Art Institute. Did all kinds of little small design studio projects where I was, I worked at a small studio in Dallas. I worked on MajorLeagueBaseball.com. And then recently I've been working at Facebook for the last year and I think 4 months. Prior to that, I had my own startup, a company called Perkville, which is still around. And I learned a lot about business. And then before that, I worked at Yahoo as a director of design.
Awesome. Did you also work at Monster.com for a period of time?
Am I imagining that? I did, back in the days. Yes, okay. I worked at Monster. Yeah, and back in New York. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are they still around?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Okay, so let's start by unpacking the experience of starting a startup in the Bay Area.
Yes.
Like, what was that experience like?
It was amazing. I learned so much about how to build a team with equity, and you can't pay them anything either. That was a real challenging moment for me where I left Yahoo. I met my business partner. We had this idea for this startup and we tried to assemble a team with no money. So effectively getting people to come on board with sweat equity in mind. And we grew that team from five individuals that we weren't paying at all initially to a fully staffed team of 20 employees. And we raised several rounds of funding. And yeah, it was a really, really fun, interesting experience and really challenging at the same time.
What was the most challenging thing? Was it the everything around finance or the lack thereof or raising finance? Or
I think it's really challenging to build a company in the Bay Area, in Silicon Valley. From the very beginning, real estate's very expensive. Talent is really expensive. I think the biggest challenge is to grow a company and build a company in the most expensive place in the world. So yeah, that was probably the biggest. The other challenges were just not knowing what to do. What do you do in payroll situations? What do you do in organizational issues? And so what we did is we really adopted mentorship. We had a mentorship model where we effectively said, we asked our board, who is the greatest guy that knows this one thing? And can I meet with them 1 hour a month? And we distributed that across the business and learned quite a bit about HR, ops, fundraising, all kinds of things.
That's interesting. I'm glad you mentioned that because I've been thinking about things like that too. Like there's lots of roles that I don't want to fill here, but I want the knowledge.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, best practice for that when you're putting these mentors or advisory boards together.
Yeah.
What works best in sort of a compensation model to get them to care about what you're doing?
It's a great question. So we tried two different models. We started off giving them equity. And what we found is it actually wasn't, we saw an initial burst in engagement where they would, you know, for the first 6 months, they'd be really active with our company. And then it slowly trickled over time. And so what we ended up doing that was the most effective was we just paid people their hourly rate for the month. And most folks were really interested in that. So, and it wasn't that expensive for us.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. I was just curious.
Yeah. We also did that for employees as well. So that was the other thing that we realized. As a startup, we realized that we didn't have everything to offer our employees. And so we didn't have a CTO, right? So what we did is we had our lead engineer partner with a really experienced engineering manager. So they were, we were able to distribute mentorship through these relationships, and it worked out fairly well.
That's really cool. I mean, I think we could probably have a whole conversation about that. I mean, I think mentorship and training and all of those things are really important in any organization.
Totally.
What were you guys trying to solve? And what are you most proud of that you did at your time at Perkville?
So we were trying to solve the problem of loyalty for small businesses and local businesses. So local businesses are struggling. How do you get and retain your best customers? How do you automate that? How do you make that frictionless? So our role in this, my role in this startup was to paint that vision of what that product was and is, do a lot of research to really figure out like what do small businesses need in a loyalty program. And what we discovered through our MVP and through several iterations is that small businesses have very little time to do a lot of management of a rewards program. So we made it completely automated. It was all dialed into their point of sale system, and it just ran in the background. So a small business owner would pay us X number of, at the time it was like their lowest plan was $50 a month, and they would get customers. They would get referrals. They would get loyal customers baked in, and they didn't have to do any work at all. So I was really proud that we were able to really build a product that was sustainable, that small businesses valued, and yeah, it we created a sustainable business from scratch. It was really difficult initially to figure out what it is we were selling, but once we got it fine tuned, it was really exciting to see that thing go from zero to one.
Yeah, that's and you did that for a while too. Seven years, you said?
7 years. Yeah,
that's a long time.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been anywhere.
Yeah.
For 7 years. The closest would be my own business. I guess same for you. What? Yeah. Why did you decide to leave?
That's a really great question. I think I learned so much about business. I learned so much about operations, HR, people management, fundraising. And what I realized through doing all of that stuff, that it took me away from what I'm most passionate about, and that's design. Right. So it was a great learning experience, but it was also a good way to figure out, fine tune exactly what it is I wanted to do. And what I wanted to do was focus on craft and focus on working on some really great products and focus on design.
Yeah, that's a big deal. I'm curious, did you notice that was a trend that was happening? And so you decided to get ahead of it by changing your world, or did you already get behind where you felt like you wanted to be with the balance of craft operations and felt like you needed to have radical change?
I think I just started to realize that I was the chief design officer of one, because I was the only designer there. And I missed working with other designers. And what attracted me to Facebook was there was just so many brilliant designers that I could work with. And that was sort of the natural segue for me. That was the selling point, essentially, that and the fact that I could still do some really fun entrepreneurial stuff at a big company.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let's talk about Facebook. So, you know, I know we can't get into any of the details of what you're doing, but tell us about the kinds of problems you're trying to solve on the groups team.
Sure. So I've been at Facebook for a year and 4 months, something like that. It feels like it's been ages. My role at Facebook is really focusing in on the groups product. And specifically, I'm looking at how do we empower community leaders? So effectively, people that run groups, how do I make them more efficient? How do I help them and build tools so that they can manage their group more efficiently and grow their group more efficiently? The way we're organized it on the groups team is there's a leaders team or community leaders team, and that's sort of my pod. And then there is a connect team, which is how do we get everybody connected to a meaningful group? And then we have an engaged team that's really looking at like how do we keep people in the group engaged in the group? And then we have the last pod is our core team. And our core team is looking at all of the common design concepts through groups and making sure those are consistent and there's continuity throughout the product. So my role is really on the leader side, really focusing in on community leaders.
That's awesome. How many people on that team and how are you guys structured and how do you guys work together?
Yeah. So I don't know the actual numbers off the top of my head. When we started, I think there were four designers. And since Facebook has really changed their mission where community is actually in the mission statement. Groups is at the centerpiece of everything that we're doing. Across the company, a lot of folks are thinking about community and specifically thinking about groups. So when I started about a year, almost a half ago, there were four designers, and now I think we're close to 20 or 30 designers. Don't quote me on that, but it's a fairly large design team spread out into two offices. We have folks in Seattle, and then we have folks in our Menlo Park office.
Awesome. Okay. So what are you doing here in Austin?
So we are working, Austin has a support office, and what we're looking at is building product for admins and how can we support them. So there's basically support concierge team out here in Austin, and what we're doing is doing some user research to better understand how they support our customers or our users.
Cool. So I have a question about the whole groups and the concept of a group leader. Yep. I'm just thinking out loud.
I'm just
kind of going with whatever's in my head. Does that mean that at least your pod is focused on the people that are already leaders? Or does it also mean that you're trying to help people that are really well-versed in a certain topic? Maybe there's a lot of activity on Facebook and trying to help them understand that they are a leader and that they should probably create a group. Yeah. Like, does it, or you just focus, is there one side of that spectrum that you're, that you guys are focused on?
Yeah. So we look at it in sort of as a journey or a life cycle or a funnel. So at the top of the funnel, it's really somebody that's brand new. They may be a community leader, and that spans everything, right? That could be a community organizer. That could be someone out there that has a Rotary Club that they manage and that they lead, but they may not have experience, direct experience with groups. The later stage of that funnel would be a power admin, someone who is really good at managing a group, and they could be managing multiple groups. So we look at how do we onboard new community leaders to get them on Facebook and groups and build a presence on Facebook to people that literally, there's a group that comes to mind, Girls Love Travel, which is there's an admin there that manages, something around like a membership of 50,000 members. Wow. And so she's dealing with a whole other set of challenges managing that group versus a group that only has like, you know, could be a local group of like maybe 30 or 40 people. So we're kind of looking at it through we're basically solving problems throughout that entire spectrum.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So when you guys are working on something, let's talk about what it's like to actually design at Facebook.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions about this, but I wanted to start with this one because it's kind of like a design language question, I guess.
Yeah.
Facebook has a very robust design language system.
Yeah.
I've seen it.
Yep.
The tools are impeccable.
Yeah.
And I imagine also that there might be some overlap in some of the stuff and widgets that you guys are building that other teams might be building on, like, for, you know, business teams and stuff like that. Like, what is it like to not just go through the UX design and, you know, like have your candidate, a thing you want to build? Like, how do you actually get it done and navigate the different teams and the different decisions that need to be made to work with the design language system or get new things added to that system?
Yeah, it's a great question. So you are correct. They have some of the best tools, and it is the embodiment of like the very best style guide I think I've ever seen. If you want to call it a style guide, it's not even a style guide. Lots of really robust tooling to help us be more efficient as designers. So the way it works at Facebook is, I'll just take an example of things that I'm working on in the groups team. We may identify a pretty big opportunity, something that we're interested in tackling, and the design lead on that pod will effectively put together a design sprint, and we'll basically say, we're going to design a North Star of what this experience should be. So let's just pretend we're not working on this. So this is just a fictitious example, but let's say we're going to build some sort of new moderation automated tool thing. So what we'll do is we'll organize a cross-functional design sprint where we'll narrow in on obviously a design problem, and we will design a forward-thinking North Star of what that experience should look like. And that's our guidepost throughout the process. Now, when we're actually going through that week-long design sprint, sometimes it's 3 days. I've actually found sometimes shorter sprints can be more effective than longer sprints. But what we'll do is we will not limit ourselves entirely to the Facebook design standards stuff. Sometimes we will use out-of-the-box components. Sometimes we will stretch those a little bit. But it's meant to be used as an aspirational North Star. So sometimes that is pushing the boundaries of what Facebook's design system looks like. From there, we will probably use that as a North Star for the next 2 or 3 months for that project. So it will guide us from 0 to 1. What does our MVP look like? There are compromises that happen in design, and it's useful to have a face of what the product should be. And our North Stars are useful in that way. So basically, as we iterate, we reference that to make sure that we are building, you know, a 5-star product.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So let's unpack that a little bit more. Yeah. When people say design sprints, I think every organization has a different definition of that.
Yeah.
What is a design sprint in Facebook design?
I mean, I think what's great about Facebook is every organization has their own sort of process as it relates to design. So I can only speak to how we look at design sprints on the groups team, but it's very much the Google Ventures style sprint. We make modifications and we kind of augment it sometimes. I mentioned this earlier, but I don't really believe in, you know, week-long sprints. I actually like to make them shorter. But yeah, it's basically the Google Ventures style design sprint.
Do you have any tips for someone that wants to try doing a 2 or 3 day sprint versus a 5 day? Like, is there a revised formula for those 3 days that you think works better for you? I mean, not necessarily Facebook, but you as a designer, like if you only have 2 or 3 days, like what would that process look like?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really useful to curate the right audience for the sprint. I think the sprints that I've been involved with that have gone awry and not been as useful have been sprints that are not nearly as focused, right? So being really clear on the problem. So at Facebook, we have this people problem framework. So effectively, everything that we do is centered around a people problem. And when I've seen design sprints not go well, it's usually because that isn't really sharp and defined. Mm-hmm. And the other thing, as just a piece of advice to a designer or anyone, I would recommend to really do the due diligence and research ahead of time. The designer's role in running, in my opinion, good design sprints utilize a lot of research and pre-work.
Yeah.
And making sure that all teammates are sort of dialed into what we're doing, making sure that if you have a data science partner, that there is adequate data science that's backing up that people problem.
Right.
And then making sure that the audience is the right folks, getting the right folks in the room.
If I was working in-house, I would probably take a similar approach. It's a little bit different from the agency side because someone approaches you and they're like, well, yeah, we want to run like a design sprint. Well, there's things that we have to do to make sure we have the right stuff to unpack for the sprint.
Yeah.
But we're coming in with almost sometimes no institutional knowledge.
Oh, totally.
So we do have to do some kind of research or other workshops just to make sure we're picking the right problem, sizing it appropriately, you know, getting the, you know, the right data. But so sometimes for us that has to happen like day zero or day, like several days before, so that we can, from a consulting perspective, like know whether we're talking about like a few days or 5 days or 14 days or whatever.
Yeah.
It's a little bit easier when we're working with someone that we've worked with for a while, because then we can kind of snap in like you're talking about and kind of already understand the problem space or have access to users or data.
Yeah. And I also think that's like, in terms of time, sometimes it's useful to have a week-long design sprint. I don't want to completely shut on the week-long design sprint because I think it can be really effective, but I think it's relative to what are your goals, right? Sometimes a two-day to three-long design sprint can be really useful in solving a really sharp problem. So you're not maybe expected to create like a huge North Star-y prototype. It's just really, let's all get in. Let's have some concentrated time to really solve a particular problem.
What I think you're saying is when you're working on like a North Star, it's kind of like the stuff that we used to do probably when we were working at like older school agencies. It's about the idea, you know, like where it should go. It's not necessarily like, let's get this testable prototype and go test it. It's like, well, this is the sort of blue sky. This is what we're shooting for.
Yeah.
Something that really pulls on the heartstrings, like something that really inspires something. So I would imagine that those 3 days, correct me if I'm wrong, you're probably looking at bigger like chunks, but not as like fleshed out.
Yeah. And the other thing that's really important around that North Star is it's useful for storytelling, right? If you're at a big company, you need to sell that vision, right? You need to sell that idea of what you're building, and making sure that everybody's excited and motivated and rallies behind that North Star is super important. So it needs to be aspirational.
We should talk more about that when we're done with the show.
Yeah.
Because I'd like to introduce you to a few people here that probably have a few questions for you about that.
Sure.
More stuff about Facebook. I have some experience with Facebook, not as much as you do.
Yeah.
I am curious. You and I have been around for a long time.
Yep.
We've been designing digital products since the 90s.
Yep.
I notice a lot of designers these days, especially in big companies where they're hiring in mass quantities, that there's a lot of young designers. And a lot of these designers from company to company, just in general, their first job was a product company. They never worked in an agency. What do you think about that? Like, because I sometimes wonder, like, are we lucky that we had the agency experiences because we were taught to pitch our work and to sell it and to collaborate and create vision and concepts? And do you feel the same way, or like, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I think there is a good, there's a lot of value in having a diverse set of experiences as a designer, and you get different things out of that, right? You get that salesmanship component, which is super important, right? To effectively like convince people that this is the right problem to solve.
Yeah.
And the agency skills, working in an agency really helps you to refine that skill. So yeah, no, I would agree. I think it's important for designers to sort of have a wide breadth of experience when it comes to doing design work. I think the ones that are the most effective, certainly at Facebook, have done lots of different things.
Yeah.
It's also important when you're building an organization to make sure that you have a lot of diversity in terms of people from different backgrounds, maybe folks that are straight from a traditional HCI background to folks that are, you know, coming from a studio to maybe someone that even comes from an entirely different world of maybe filmmaking or architecture. I think once you get that sort of hodgepodge of backgrounds, you sometimes get really useful, beautiful things in terms of collaboration.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, I've never worked in-house at a big company, but I wholeheartedly agree with that. We hire people from, they're classically trained.
Yeah.
People that are really great at graphic design or web design or coming to product design, people that are coming from different industries. And I think that variety really does help. I'm not always sure how other people look at that. And I imagine it's a lot different in the Bay Area. I guess there's maybe a lot more opportunities for a designer in the Bay Area, which is a whole other conversation.
Yeah.
But so I'm curious, because you mentioned this, and I thought it would be a good thing to talk about, this notion of, you said earlier, at every organization process is going to be a little bit different.
Yeah.
Before we started recording, you were saying that Facebook isn't agile in a traditional sense.
Yeah.
Like, what can you say about Facebook's design approach to process and ownership of the work, and how designers have more responsibility
and
opportunity?
Yeah. I think it's important that we're mindful that what we do as designers, as product designers, this is an evolving field, right? Things are sort of changing a lot. You know, we've been doing this for a little while, and the role of a designer is different now than it was, I don't know, 10 years ago or even a couple of years ago. The way we ship software, where we ship product at Facebook, product designers are not order takers, right? We're not effectively like waiting for someone to give us requirements. We're effectively driving requirements. We're determining what it is we want to ship. We are understanding what we have enough business acumen to understand like what is the right thing that we should be shipping. What should we scale down? What should we scale up? I can't speak to outside of to Facebook at large, but what we look at on the groups team is Facebook product designers are really thinking critically about the experiences that we ship, specifically like the product requirements as it relates to the things that we want to make investments in. So a lot of times that is a direct reflection of that North Star that we created, right? Mm-hmm. So there could be a whole set of imaginary requirements that the designer and other folks are helping to drive, and that ultimately makes it into things that we ship or things that we test. Thing to be mindful of is that at Facebook, we are we could run experiments really quickly. It's unlike any other place in the world. You could test things instantly, and it's not only do we have really good design tools, but we also have really good tools for experimentation. So it's pretty liberating in that we could basically say, I want to test this wacky thing and see what happens.
With millions of people, like almost instantly.
Yeah. So the scale and the ability to do that quickly is mind-boggling. So in short, I would say that designers drive a lot of our sort of the product direction. And we work in close collaboration with our cross-functional partners. So much of those design decisions and the problems that we solve and kind of the emphasis of the problems that we solve are centered around things that we identify in a sprint and things that we identify through data and research.
Just a personal question. I've seen a lot of the ways that Facebook can test stuff, and I personally think it's great. I'm just curious from your standpoint, not Facebook per se, but companies that can signal test that quickly.
Yeah.
Do you feel there's a right way to do that? Because sometimes I wonder if, like, I can always see the benefit in that, but sometimes I wonder if running experiments and testing it like that inhibit one's ability to think outside of the box. Maybe I'm wrong. Mm-hmm. But how do you guys manage that, the both creating the creation of the North Star and the sort of testing of it and really, really, really understanding the way people are responding to it and making sure that that the things are like innovative and and not watered down? And is there a way you think about that?
Yeah, I think it's a really great question. And I think there's lots of different methodologies and philosophies around testing. I am not a believer in doing incrementally growthy kind of experiments where you're just testing different shades of a color or anything along those lines. I believe in taking bold bets and testing those. And in my experience at my startup and working at Facebook and at other places, when I've made incremental tests, I've seen incremental results, right? When I've tested really big, bold things, I've seen huge angle changers as it relates to metrics. I think innovation can happen. I absolutely believe innovation can happen in a testing environment. I think it's really the scope of the experiments and making sure that you are being ambitious enough.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's probably the way I would sort of frame that. And the other thing that I think is really important is to the marriage of quantitative data and qualitative data is so important, right? So if we're doing any sort of split testing, we're also going to be looking at some lab stuff, right? We're going to be bringing users to really sort of gut check that from a qualitative standpoint. And then the other thing that we'll do in my team is we're going to look at sentiment, right? So we're going to really understand, like, does a community leader feel supported? Do they feel like they're actually getting a lot of value out of this experience? So those are sort of the fuzzy things that we test. So all of those things are combined, I think, help us to better understand, should we build XYZ? Should we invest in XYZ?
And thanks for that.
Yep.
On the most recent episode of the podcast, I was talking with Greg Story, who is formerly an owner at Happy Cog and now is a VP at USAA. And we were having a conversation about the need for designers to build empathy skills in order for them to work inside of their organization.
Yeah.
To understand that, like, there was a lot of hard work done by a lot of people to get somewhere and like really having empathy within the organization.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts around on development of empathy and both in the organization and also really understanding the way people are using your products? Cause I mean, you guys are Facebook, you're working on products that affect millions of people and they're all different. And also Maybe you could also chime in a little bit about what you mentioned last night, because I thought it was really interesting. You said something like, we're doing, there's all these companies in the Bay Area that are doing all this work, but most of the people using these products aren't in the Bay Area.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel really passionate about this. I think as we start to develop these sort of markets that have a huge amount of talent, a huge amount of smart people, we need to get outside of our little filter bubble and connect with real people and really understand and empathize with folks in non-bubbles, effectively. So that could be Middle America, that could be in Indonesia, that could be in other parts of the world. But I think it's just so important for us to not develop products and come up with feature ideas in these vacuums. I think it's so important. And it's kind of an obvious point, I think.
Yeah.
But I think it's more important than ever to certainly at Facebook, and I believe this, to be true for any folks doing product development in Silicon Valley, that it's an unnatural environment, and we really need to make sure that we test their assumptions in places that are very different than those sort of bubbles. And I don't like using the word bubble, but we as designers, we need to develop empathy for folks from all walks of life. We're living in such a polarized world that it's really important that we really understand, like, how does someone in middle America use our products? Like how do they experience those products? What are their problems? And yeah, I think it's really important for us to spend more time there and, you know, at big companies and small companies. And there's ways to do it with small companies as well. But, you know, that diverse perspective will only yield better product, in my opinion.
I mean, not everyone has the luxury of working at a company like Facebook with the team and the resources and in a product that really lends itself to do that easier. Yeah. What would, being that you've been in on both sides of the fence now, like running your own startup and working with customers and trying to build a product for that market, and then now being at Facebook and working on a product that scale, like for people that do want to develop this skill set better and get out of their, like, behind their desk, whether an agency or a product, like, you have any tips on how they can do that?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I mean, one of the things I did for my own startup is I was doing sales for a while. And so I was selling my product to local businesses. And what I found is it was such a beautiful augmentation of user research, because I had an MVP product and I was going to door to door and I was trying to convince some small business owner that had limited amount of time to buy my product. Huh. And what was interesting about that is it was a quick forcing function to find out, like, is what I'm designing shit or not? Is it delivering enough value? And I literally had small windows to do that.
Yeah.
So that was real cheap. That was literally me coming, like, lugging a laptop around, going door to door, going to a coffee shop and saying, hey, do you have 5 minutes to just check out this demo? So, I mean, I think those kinds of things are empathy building. They're low cost and they help you to really understand what people are dealing with and what's meaningful to them. You know, you could do that in a lab. You could do that in a lot of wide variety of different ways. But I think it's just so important for us to do as much of that as possible, because obviously we're building products for people, and it's just really important. And from my point of view, to make sure that we're empathetic to folks from all different walks of life, right?
Yeah. To keep going.
Yeah.
I run an agency. You've worked at agency before.
Yeah. What can we do?
Yeah, we've both done freelance. Yeah. How does a consultant navigate this when, you know, sometimes you have customers that want you to have access to their data, to their customers, and others want to shield you from that. So any tips there from a consulting or freelance, especially freelance perspective?
Yeah. You know, I think it really depends on the product work that you're doing. Sometimes you could find proxy voices, in my experience. So sometimes you may not have a direct line to the customer. So sometimes what you might have to do is have to find sort of what is the next available archetype for that person. Yeah. I think anything is better than nothing. So that can be doing remote testing. That could be talking to the small business owner down the street. I think so long as you're talking to people and getting outside of the studio that you're in, I think it's so important, because we as designers love to do design ideation work with other designers and vibe off of a sketch on a whiteboard. And I think it's just so important to get that outside, like, perspective on what you're doing. I think the most important thing, if I were going to go back to my startup and if I was in a studio environment, is to spend a lot of time recruiting and figuring out, like, all right, is there a segment that I can bounce ideas off of in a rural part of the world that we have access to? I think those kinds of things are useful. The other thing that I did quite a bit with my startup is I talked to my mom. I literally said, I'm going to walk you through this. You're a small business owner. My dad's a salesman, 50-year-old salesman. Give me a read on this experience. Like, what do you think this does? Would you pay for this? Would you actually pay for this? And I think just really training your brain to doing more of that. I mean, it's basic user experience design work, but I think it's just more important than ever to get outside of your own bubbles, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think everyone cares about this, but it's so easy to forget sometimes when you have deadlines or you're in the studio and you're just trying to get work done. And it's an easy thing to forget.
Yeah.
I think sometimes how important it is just to talk to people.
Yeah.
You're designing for people.
And I think you can learn so much in really brief amounts of time. Yeah. Like I said, when I was doing door to door sales, trying to sell my product, I knew within 2 minutes whether or not something was stupid or not. And I spent hours working on it. And I was just literally like, I would never do that. I need it to be integrated to my point of sale system. I'm not going to manually input in data. And I'm like, oh, that's obvious, right? So like, I think those kinds of obvious aha moments can save you a lot of time.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing your perspective on that.
Yeah.
So what does the future look like for you? Like, what are you hoping to accomplish this year? What are your hopes for 2019 for yourself?
I mean, I think in terms of my goals, I really want to spend time just getting better at my craft, getting better at design, learning from others. I'm in my 40s and I'm constantly learning, and that's exciting to me. And so I spent a lot of time at my startup learning about business and learning about management. And I felt like it was really important for me to get back to my craft. So this year and the next, I don't know, couple of years, who knows how long, I want to spend a lot of concentrated time learning from really great designers and improving my design skill sets.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for making time to stop by. Looking forward to hanging out this evening.
Yeah.
How can people connect with you on the internet?
It's a great question. I'm not that much of a public figure, I guess. I mean, I'm not really sort of that involved in Twitter or whatnot, but maybe LinkedIn. I don't know.
Or maybe people can email me.
Yeah.
And then I can just send spam your way.
Or just totally. Absolutely. Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram. I don't know. That's, you know.
Cool. Well, thanks for tuning in to the Hustle Podcast, and we'll see you next time.
Hustle is brought to you by Fundsize, a digital service and product design agency that works with inspiring teams to uncover opportunities, evolve popular products, bring new businesses to market, and prepare for the future. Learn more at fundsize.co. I'm Brian, a design lead and cosmic surfer here at Fundsize, and may the force be with you.